You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
This is Solange Ellis, founder of Stable Riding, and this is the December 23rd, 2025 episode of Stable Riding with Solange, part of Horses in the Morning. I'm here the fourth Tuesday of every month to talk to you all about the rider and how we can make ourselves better in the saddle. Coming up on today's show, we're going to focus on complex body histories and how they affect our riding. All riders have bodies and all bodies have histories, as well as current states of being. We all know this when we think about it, but the nuance of individual rider bodies and our body's needs are often skipped over in the horse industry. Discussing the horse industry and how it views, treats, talks about, and sometimes also ignores riders' bodies is actually a large part of my podcast for next month, so stay tuned. That's going to be a good one. But for this episode, I will stay in my current topic lane and talk about complex bodies. But before that, I have a brief PSA about kids and their bodies. Lots of kids take lessons, and lots of us have kids who are enrolled in lessons, and often, being that they are kids, it is assumed that it's so much easier for them to learn to ride and therefore be taught to ride. Who has heard, kids are so easy, they bounce when they fall? Now, one thing tends to be true. Being young, they often have no injuries that impact on their movement or motion on the horse's back. But they do also have two other huge obstacles that they have to overcome. One, they're often light mass. And this is a big deal. And I mean a really big deal, because 120 pounds is minimum optimum rider mass. When a rider is under that 120 pound weight limit, they do not possess enough physical mass to keep their hands, feet, and hips down simultaneously as the horse's gaits get more disrupted, either by speed or individual motion. And I always tell everybody, who's seen a little tiny kid riding a bouncy pony and they kind of look like a monkey riding a pig at the circus with their crazy monkey arms? This is why, because they're light mass. Light mass riders require a very special type of instruction that allows them to be stable with this physical handicap. There's nothing sillier and possibly more dangerous than expecting a small child to ride the same way as a grown man does. Now, one thing about kids is that they do grow, which means that they will not stay light mass forever. Though I do teach some petite adult ladies who are below or at that limit. But this means that they grow. Their bodies change wildly and sometimes rapidly. Limbs are new lengths, their center of mass changes, everything. So as they grow, they have to change their position in real time to compensate for their new bodies. People do assume teaching kids is easier. Again, that whole old dog, new trick thing. But in reality, teaching kids is actually much more difficult. You're often starting with simply not enough kid physically. You're also shepherding them through multiple growth phases, all while safeguarding their confidence, stability, and safety. So if you teach kids or have a child who's enrolled in riding, please be very aware of their weight to height ratio. If any of you have any questions about this, as always, please feel free to reach out to me. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have. Back to the grown-ups. Okay. If we were being really honest, almost all adult riders have complex body histories to some degree. We all have injuries, surgeries, and other things that let us know it's going to rain soon. Within my stable riding system, when I categorize complex body history riders, this includes riders who have had joint replacements, resurfacings, or fusions, past injuries, some horse-related, some not, that affect the rider's range of motion or mobility, past or current illnesses that present in a rider as weakness or loss of mobility or motion, scoliosis to varying degrees, multiple sclerosis, or cerebral palsy. These riders come to my program and specifically the lab for a few reasons. The tools in the lab offer these riders a place to safely explore what their body can and cannot do. My tools allow them to mimic all the possible positions that they may need on a horse without the risk of finding their limit on the back of a giant moving flight animal. having a lower risk space to explore and learn in is very important for my complex body history riders, as often they will pay a higher physical cost should they fall. This does not make them cowardly. It makes them reasonable and logical, and in my opinion, quite brave. These riders are so committed to continuing their relationship with riding that they're willing to take the time to do a deep dive into their own physicality and create an individual riding system that allows them to keep doing what they love. That takes some serious courage. Since all of my instruction is based in stability and working with the rider's individual body type, I am uniquely suited to help guide them, both in body positions and tack recommendations. Now is a good time for me to mention what I call my Fabergé egg riders. See, dear listener, I'll say in a clinic or a lesson that I have two kinds of riders. On one hand, I have my regular riders, and on the other, I have my Fabergé egg riders. My regular riders, I'm not as concerned with them falling off. If an 18-year-old kid wants to jump bareback, I'll ask them, "Are you going to cry if you fall off?" And if they say, "No," I'll let them. I'll tell them, "Go ahead, close the arena gate and give it a try." And if they fall off, I usually don't even stand up out of my chair, because the price they pay from that fall is maybe when they roll over the next morning, when their alarm goes off, they notice that one side of their butt hurts. And that's basically it. Because those riders are in a time and place in their life where it's appropriate for them to try these sorts of things. Now, my Fabergé egg riders, those are the riders I really don't want to drop. They cannot really afford to hit the ground. So with these riders, my instruction is more conservative. The horse choices, position options, tack, and activities are all designed to minimize the risk to their bodies. My complex body history riders are almost always my Fabergé egg riders. Teaching complex bodies is one of the most challenging and rewarding things I have the honor to do in my work. I've done some of my best curriculum building and creation working with these riders. The exercises and instruction that I've invented for them have become some of my core curriculum that I give to all my riders. An instructor is only as good as their student base. And the more riders I teach, and more importantly, the more unique riders I teach, the better. Is it fun to teach a perfect rider a lesson? Sure. Tall, fit, young, smart, capable, of course. But it's not challenging. And it will certainly not be an interaction that fundamentally alters how I understand human bodies and how they interact with horse bodies. To quote Holmes, "Data, data, data. I cannot make bricks without clay." So again, of course, I have the most perfect rider as a guest to speak on this subject. Are you noticing a pattern yet? This month, I have Stephanie, a complex body history rider who is committed to her skill set and has recently achieved several of her big riding goals. Stephanie, hello. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
I'm so stoked. I'm so excited. Thank you for having me.
I know how much fun we're going to have, so I'm very excited for it. Okay, let's start with how we met. I remember meeting you almost 2 years ago. One of my other riders and a friend who's also a riding instructor recommended you to me specifically for the lab. It was right before Equine Affair in 2024 when I went in Columbus. And I remember you saying you wanted to get on my calendar before I got a rush of riders from that event. And boy, were you right. Stable riding really took off from there. Does that sound right to you? Is that how
we met? Yes. 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 I remember telling Sam that, so I had two horses that I was riding at the time that my body just was not getting along with, particularly at the Deep Sea Canter. Mm-hmm. And I remember telling Sam after a lesson, I said, "I think I need to go to Solange." Mm-hmm. She's like, "Yeah, I think that might be a good idea."
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. So I ask everybody some normal background questions just to give the audience some idea of what kind of riding history you had. And then we'll get like into the nitty gritty. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Can you tell us how old you are now and how old you were when you started riding?
So I'm 33 now, and I was 6 when I started riding.
Now, were you always drawn to horses, or did you love for them grow as you got older?
I'd say both. So I started riding at this little backyard Arabian breeding farm, and I would say it grew probably two years after that. The barn owner had a little fun show, and I remember basically show prepping this chestnut mare that I was riding. And I knew then and there, I was like, this is so much fun. If I can like keep this up and not do any other activities, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life.
Isn't it so interesting how you can really pinpoint the moment in time when you went, this is definitely for me.
Right. Right.
Like every rider has that, like that memory of when you just knew.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Are you comfortable sharing with the listeners some information about your own complex body history and how it affects your riding?
Yeah. So I have cerebral palsy. If we can break it down a little bit further, I'm hemiplegic cerebral palsy. So it impacts my left side, both my arm and my leg. And then break that down even further, kind of the subtype that I have is ataxic. So it impacts my balance and coordination. And how it sort of manifests itself in my riding is a lot of probably more crookedness than I even know. And keeping my left heel down has always been a struggle.
I remember the first couple times I taught you that your left leg was very constricted.
Right.
And, you know, I felt sort of, I suspected at that time that it might have been contributed with the kind of instruction you had and that you were going to have ability to have more range of motion than you thought. And I'm really glad
that my hunch was
right, because so much cool stuff has happened.
Right. Oh, yeah, big time, big time.
In the beginning, we started working together specifically in the lab, my equisizer and on the home horse. And we've since moved on to horses, but we still sprinkle lab lessons in here and there where we would feel useful. And I know on my end, I feel very confident in saying that our biggest breakthroughs in your riding and body position that we've had together were almost always in the lab.
Yeah,
do you agree with that? You agree with that?
100. Oh, 100. 100%. And I remember when you had me do your famous stability check, I remember that I couldn't even like I was so not flexible that I couldn't lean back all the way.
I remember that. Yeah.
And you were... And you were like, I think we can fix this. And I think it was maybe like a couple months later, you were like, you couldn't do that a couple months ago.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I remember the first time I really saw you be able to like put your hips under you and bring your shoulders back. I remember the first time that you were moving your hips really fluidly on the equisizer, and the first time you stood up and your left heel went down. Do you remember that?
Yes,
we both just stared in the mirror.
Yes. Yes.
And I was like, don't move. I have to get a picture of this because
you
suspect that something's possible and you hope that something's possible and you work towards it. But until it really happens, you're not sure if you're going to get there. And it was really, those were some tremendous body position breakthroughs.
Oh, yes. Yes.
How would you describe sort of how the riding tools have helped supported you in your riding? You know, sometimes people are not sure about getting on them. They don't know if they'll work or if they're gimmicky or if they're really going to transfer. So I always like to ask people, how do you feel that the equisizer and the home horse really helped you upgrade your riding skills?
So I knew when I walked into the lab, homie, as I like to call him, the home horse.
Yes, homie. Yep.
He was going to be my best friend. And as it turned out, he ended up being. I've been on probably more exercise balls than I care to admit through physical therapy and personal training.
Yep.
And my hips, I'd get on them and my hips would be like, what is this? Like, we're sitting on a ball. We don't understand, you know, what is it you want us to do? Mm-hmm. And instantaneously, when I sat on the home horse, I feel like my hips and my pelvis, my whole body basically was like, you've given us a tool that we can actually move with. And we understand, because part of cerebral palsy is there's a disconnect between the brain, my brain and my muscles. But instantaneously, it was like my brain was like, we understand now.
Yes. I talk to people a lot about exercise balls because it's a thing that has a place. Like right. being able to sit on a ball and mobilize your pelvis in all directions is really helpful for riders, especially in the beginning of learning how to mobilize their pelvis separate from their ribs. Like most people don't understand, like you said, neurologically, how to move their hips separate from their ribs, because unless you're like a hula dancer or a belly dancer, you don't spend a lot of time doing that in your normal adult life. So I tell people anything you do in the beginning that gets your hips moving separate from your ribs is of value. But eventually, if you're doing it specifically to ride, you need a riding specific tool. And I wish I had like the math to explain it, but exercise balls are convex, they're round. So you move around the arc on the top of it, and the horse and the home horse are convex. So you're sitting like in a bowl. So you're right. moving in the actual direction that the horse is moving. And that's what makes that home horse such an amazing bridging step, because the arc of the motion is in the same direction as the horse.
Right. Yeah.
I've had a couple really big home horse breakthroughs, specifically with people with their sitting canter, where it's just like, I don't know if I would have been able to lead that person to that epiphany outside of having that tool. So homie's a great guy.
He is. He's amazing.
When I met you, you were riding in a very sort of structured, built up dressage saddle with a high cantle and traditional non-jointed stirrups. And I'm always cautious when recommending a big tack chain with a rider if I've just met them, because saying everything you're riding is wrong for you is not the best way to start like a good communication relationship. So usually over time, you know, I'll say, hey, do you want to try this? Do you want to try that? Maybe this kind of saddle. Slowly, you and I kind of migrated you over to a very like old school model, very flat Crosby Equilibrium close contact hunt saddle. And then you tried out the MDC Super Sport Flex stirrups that have the wider foot base, and they have the offset eye at the top that goes like 45 and 90 degrees. Now, a flatter saddle is really what people think of when they're seeking more support on the horse. But a lot of times having less between you and the horse and that freedom to move your body where it needs to be is often much more secure than like a really big built up saddle. How has making such a large tack change helped your riding? And would you recommend a rider keeping an open tack or equipment mind?
Oh, definitely. So I'll split both the stirrups and the saddle into two different parts. I would say with the MDC stirrups, those were one of those things where like, why didn't I make this change like years ago? Because that changed my, I can actually put my heel down now because of the 90 degrees and how heavy they are. I know they don't always work for everybody, but that was a change where I was like, I needed this badly. The saddle change from the dressage to the close contact, I think that was able to come because I realized that, you know, I'm getting way more flexible, but I'm being constrained by the yes. saddle. Mm-hmm. And everybody noticed it. Sam noticed it. My other instructor noticed it. You noticed it. So by the time I came to you and Sam and was like, I think I need to start looking for a close contact. And I've been in yours enough that I realized that this was the way to go. So I would just say to anybody, you know, just keep an open mind. That Western saddle that you have or that dressage saddle, you know, may not serve you in the long run.
It's always been a priority for me to have like a sort of like a library of tack here on site for riders to try out, because they're big investments. It's a big purchase. Sometimes you have to order them. You're not sure. Shipping's a whole thing. So to be able to come to a place and try different tack out, and now that we have so many wonderful equisizers, I can tack up three or four equisizers in three different, I call them little outfits. And you can go from one to the other in quick succession and feel different flap conformations, different seat types, different stirrup types. The stirrups are, I mean, they're the foundation of our riding position. And yes. I am deeply in love with my old school Herm Springer, like the four ball joint stirrups. I can never ride in anything else because of the way my legs are. So I understand when people find something that they really love, how transformative it can be. And also that it's okay to sort of stray from that non-traditional place. Because when I started riding in my jointed stirrups, it was early in like the nouveau stirrup sort of idea. And people were like, you can't ride in those. They're not traditional. And I'm like, yo, fam, my right foot goes numb.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like if I try and put my heel down against something that doesn't bend, and I think it's better that I don't lose feeling in my foot.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, and now stirrups are much more, it's more socially acceptable in the horse world to have a different kind of stirrup. So I'm glad to see that we've sort of opened our minds a little bit, but especially for riders with injuries or complex bodies, different stirrups, man, it can be a literal game changer.
Yes. Yes. And I didn't realize with the MDCs how the heaviness of it would really help me, would really help me out. Because I know it's popular now to have, you know, everybody's like, oh, you know, the lightweight.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize how them being so heavy would help.
Well, and it's that individual rider. This is where we come back to that individualization that all riders need, but then riders with complex body histories need even more. And being open to the process and willing to do that kind of deep diagnostic work to find out what's happening, because sometimes the results are worth it.
Yeah.
So as you mentioned, you ride at several different facilities. And this past summer, you had a really wonderful show season. And I know I most likely have listeners who also compete in show. So I thought that would be a great story for you to tell.
Yeah. So my barn goes to a show that's like a 5-show series. Mm-hmm. And I was able to do I was able to do all 5 of them. And I got to finally see where all of my, you know, lab work and, you know, just extra riding in general just really paid off. And I actually got to show the horse that was one of the reasons why I came to you, because he's very, very seat friendly. Mm-hmm. And I don't typically ride horses that you need to use a lot of seat for.
Yeah.
And to be able to go into the ring and barely touch my reins at all, to have my other instructor by the outside of the ring and go, don't look down, but your heels are freaking awesome right now.
Yes!
It was just unreal.
Yes, I get chills thinking about it.
Unreal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, and that's, you know, you're able to access your weight aids now. And how cool is that? It opens you up to a whole new range of horses, and the horses you're currently riding, a new sort of nuanced communication, and the horses almost universally prefer a weight aid over like a rein or a leg aid. So when riders can get to have really competent weight aids, it's such a fun evolution to watch.
Yeah. Yep.
So this past summer, you and I had a 2-day rider intensive.
It was so fun.
It was. This was a full day intensive. So we spent 6 hours a day together. You'd asked me to share clips and the story and videos of your intensive on my social media feeds. And we both got quite a lot of hate from the comment section. Now, we all know that the horse world is full of strong personalities, big opinions, and the occasional mean girl. I want to ask you, how did you handle all that negativity? And how would you recommend someone going through a comment section attack comes through on the other end with their sanity intact?
So I believe I was like the fifth or sixth rider of the intensive season. Mm-hmm. So I had a pretty good idea of what was coming, because Courtney, who was your Mongol Derby rider,
yes,
had started getting pretty attacked for hers.
Yes.
And
yes,
I thought, well, if they're going to attack the Mongol Derby rider, who definitely needs probably stable riding way more than the rest of us, I knew what was coming. So I kind of just decided just to have fun with it and to see from not only stable riding, but my barn as well. Everybody was just like jumping in and offering comments. So I really think I got to see the horse world kind of at its finest, with everybody just being supportive of each other.
I think that's a really healthy, wonderful outlook. And you were the perfect person to be willing to share sort of your story publicly. My algorithms now on social know that I have a business. So I'm constantly getting like CEO like bro content, which I think is so amusing. And I watched a guy who I actually really like talk about hater comments and stuff like that. And he says, anytime anyone disagrees with decisions I'm making, I just think to myself, they're publicly saying that I'm living my life in a way that they don't prefer. And that's fine for me because they're living their life in a way I don't prefer. And we both get to live our lives the way we want. And it was kind of like this really interesting little light bulb moment. So now when I wade in and I answer people, I just think to myself, hey, I'm living my life in a way they don't prefer. They're living their life in a way that maybe I wouldn't ideally do, but that's okay. And it's, if you can use it as a tool for your own betterment, I think it can be very like empowering and fortifying and help you sort of evolve. But you got to do some things.
Exactly.
The comment section doesn't mess around.
Nope.
So our intensive was in the warm weather months, which means we got to spend time in the lab on horses in the arena, but also we kept going to the park, our local metro park, on some trail rides. And the reason that we designed your training this way was our goal was to prepare you for your very first fox hunt, which we did. We both prepared you and we went. We were blessed with a truly fabulous day out hunting. I mean, it was like Pixar designed this day. The weather was perfect. The light was gorgeous. It was really amazing. So I want to ask you, what was your favorite part of riding the hounds?
So I will say my favorite part of riding the hounds was cantering around the little meadow field that we did.
Yes.
But I will say I'm the type of person that always enjoys like the prep to it.
Yes.
So
well then boy is fox hunting for you.
Yeah. Right. So after my intensive, I would take any opportunity at my home barn to try and get out of the arena as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And thankfully we have a very steady Eddie Appaloosa. His name's Finn. And he loves to get out of the arena as well. So I would go around our yard, any lessons I would have, Sam would take me, you know, down our trails. Mm-hmm. And probably the culmination of all that was the final ride that you had me do. You had me hook up with another one of your students and we went down your trail so you could make sure that I was okay going down hills and such. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The moment that I knew I was 100% ready was me cantering Tulip around your cross country jumps.
Yep.
And I was like, anything could happen right now. Tulip could trip over over a marmot hole.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we'll be fine.
Yep.
Now
yep.
Stable riders don't come after me. I love Tulip.
Well, I think what you said was you have done a really great job in your riding and falling in love with the work. You know, you love the prep, you love getting ready, you love the work. And for a sport like ours where you ride weekly and sometimes, you know, more than once a week and sometimes more than one horse a day, but you only get to go to the event that you're preparing for so infrequently. You only go to a couple hunts a year, only a couple hundred paces a year, maybe one or two big riding trips, or show season's kind of short, that it's like the prep work to event ratio is really unbalanced. So to not get burnt out and to still find joy in it and to still progress in it, you have to fall in love with the work. And I feel like you really have, you know?
Yes.
Stephanie, I am endlessly impressed with your commitment to your riding and how much progress you have made in our time working together. As a rider who has successfully achieved your riding goals with a complex body history, what advice or encouragement do you have for other riders who may also fall into the complex body history category?
I would say go to stableriding.us and book yourself at least a one-day intensive. I would say don't worry if you don't think you can handle it. You're going to be able to. And then make sure you pack in your suitcase some donuts for baby James and harvest cheddar chips for the goats.
For the goats. But also, I mean, something that I observe in you and then I know has contributed so much to your successes. You don't let anything stop you. You don't let anything hold you back. You don't let anyone talk you out of anything. You don't engage in any like negative self-talk. Like you're just really so unerringly constantly positive. And I think riders without complex body history struggle with judgment and negative self-talk and, well, I should be, and not willing to meet themselves where they are or enjoy the phase that they're in. And I just see you have this really wonderful disposition and outlook into what you're doing. And I think that has really been the key to your success, you know?
Yeah, I think so too.
Because I'm always like, I think you can do this, or I think we should try this, or how do you feel about it? And you're like, yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.
You're just right there the whole time. And as an instructor, I mean, what else can you ask for? That's a fabulous student.
Yeah.
And I think the horses feel that vibe off you. I think the horses know that you're here and you're happy and you're present and we can do it and you're confident. I mean, confidence is something that's so difficult for riders to find, and it's so difficult for women to find that.
Yeah.
You know, you should really take the time to be so proud of how you treat yourself and how you treat your riding, because it's really a breath of fresh air and has been a huge asset in your progression.
Well, thank you.
I'm just really proud of you, Stephanie.
I've had so much fun.
And the goats and the horses have had fun with cheddar, cheddar,
right,
sun
right.
chips and plenty of donuts. Everybody has a great time. Thank you so much, Stephanie, for taking the time to tell your story and inspire other riders on their riding journey.
Thank you for having me.
It was great. Stephanie has been such a fabulous addition to Stable Riding, so I really appreciate her joining the guest list here on the pod. While I sit and reflect on the complex body history riders I've taught, two things really come to my mind: joy and judgment. Riders tend to prejudge themselves, and too harshly, over what they think they can do and also what they think they should do. See, riding can be as much or as little as you want. That's the great part about the sport. We can make it what we like. You can ride fast or slow, inside or out, in any saddle with whatever goals sound fun and engaging to you. Now, sometimes the spectrum of choice can be paralyzing, but ultimately that freedom means that riding can be for anyone. I want all my riders to not pre-limit themselves. We are all more capable than we give ourselves credit for. And I really want my riders to not judge themselves for what brings them joy and allow themselves to have fun. So often I hear riders say, I know I should be, fill in the blank, but I really just want to, as though the thing they want to do, the thing that brings them joy and is fun, is lesser somehow. We should never judge what brings us joy. This month's rider tip and homework is an exercise that I actually created for Stephanie and have since used it wisely in my teaching. Okay, everybody, let's talk about leaning or being crooked on our horse. Everyone who rides can tell you about their good foot and their bad foot. They will have a leg and foot that does their job, the heel that stays down and the leg that stays still and the foot that stays in the stirrup. Their other leg, that guy's the personality hire. He really phones it in. The other leg moves about, your foot is never in place in the stirrup, and you can just feel that heel coming up. First, let me explain why this happens, then tell you what to do to fix it, and then finally, I'll give you the rider tip to try out. Why does this happen to all of us to some degree? That's easy. There's no symmetry in nature. If we were to strip your flesh and measure your bones, your skeleton is not symmetrical on the left and right sides. One leg's a little longer than the other, et cetera, et cetera. So when you sit on a horse, you naturally drape one way or the other, making one side lower and heavier. That's your good side. And the other side higher and lighter. That's your bad side. Now, we know that you cannot be perfectly even side to side, as your bones are not. But we want you to look and feel as even as possible, both for the horse, but also for your personal stability. When we say good foot and bad foot, these are easy labels for heavy foot and light foot. One side has more of your body weight pooling into it than the other, which means that if you're a little heavier in your right stirrup, you're leaning a little that way, and more of your weight is on that side. So if your horse was to spook and spin out from under you to the left, you would fall off the right side so fast, you wouldn't even know what happened, like a potato rolling off the kitchen counter. So it's in your best interest to be as laterally even as possible. Now, if there's no symmetry in nature, that means your horse is not laterally even either. Most horses have a good way and a bad way, or a direction that's slightly easier for them than the other. If you and your horse's bad ways and good sides are opposite, then you cancel each other out. And on that horse, you may not notice if you're asymmetrical as much or notice it at all. If you and your horse have the same bad side, you will really feel it. And you may need to adjust just one stirrup to help you both level out. So now that we know why this happens, how do we even begin to correct it? When a rider really leans, it's very obvious to anyone looking, but 99% of the time, the rider does not know they are leaning. This makes it almost impossible for them to correct, as they don't know that they're doing it. When they sit crooked on their horse, they feel in the middle. See, their mind, their equilibrium is calibrated a little off center. So if they feel even when they are visibly leaning right, then when we center them, they will feel like they're falling off the left side of their horse, which is unnerving, so they don't want to do it, understandably. Also, since their good leg is the heavier leg, that leg gets stronger and looser and easier to use, while the bad leg is lighter and hollow, so that leg becomes weaker and tighter, making it much more difficult to use. Crookedness quickly becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. We correct this by having the rider index both lateral sides of their body and swing from one lateral extreme to the other so that they feel what all the way right feels and what all the way left feels. Only when they know what both sides feel like can they shift their weight to both lateral extremes. Then they can center themselves in the middle. So here's the tip: what you can do to help stay laterally even on your horse. Start if you can in front of a mirror, standing on your own feet, and shift your weight all the way right and all the way left. Notice how your legs feel and also how your hips and shoulders look. You want to keep your shoulders and hips level as you shift side to side. Then sit on a hard chair or stool, preferably still in front of that big mirror, and repeat the exercise again using your seat bones instead of your feet, side to side, keeping your shoulders as level as possible. Next, onto your horse. Start with even stirrups and walk even amounts of strides, I'd say at least 12 or so, putting all of your weight in your left stirrup and then all of your weight in your right stirrup. And repeat this with both sides at least 5 times. Then we're going to shift to your seat bones. So now we're going to walk and you're going to put all of your weight in your right seat bone and then all of your weight in your left seat bone. And you'll repeat both sides at least 5 times for, again, a minimum of 12 strides. Now we're going to make it a little bit more tricky. We're going to add our head in. Return to shifting from side to side in your stirrups while also turning your head as far as you can in that direction, keeping your chin up and level as you swivel your head. Then, still including your head, shift from seat bone to seat bone. Once you've done all that, seek the middle. Even weight and pressure in your stirrups and seat bones. Once you've done it sitting your walk, then I recommend sitting trot and sitting canter if those are positions that you're often in on your horse. As always, if you can, have a friend film you from the front and back while you do this. The videos will not only show you your progress, but will also give you proof of when you're actually centered. You can find our show notes and links to today's guests and products in the show notes on your podcast player or on my website, stableriding.us. We are on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok as Stable Riding. We're here once a month on the fourth Tuesday of every month. We have our own RSS feed. Just search Stable Riding with Solange in your podcast player, or you can find us on the main Horses in the Morning feed. All riders can be stable riders, and a stable rider makes for a happy horse.